The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Sunday Times reporting through the good offices of John Mooney and Ruby Hegarty that the IPAS arson in Drogheda is now being viewed as a potential attempt to kill, so say the Gardaí. And the paper is reporting that the investigation of the arson attack on an accommodation centre for refugees in Drogheda has been upgraded after CCTV showed a masked man breaking into the building before setting it ablaze using petrol. And they have a snap of the CCTV of exactly that happening. And it's a fairly horrific picture. And it fits into a pattern we have seen, I think, in the last number of years. We are well into double figures in terms of arson attacks. And of course, there were the events in City West over the last number of days and weeks, and the violence that ensued there and the injuries to members of the Gardaí. With us is Noreen O'Sullivan, former Garda Commissioner and, of course, Assistant Secretary General for the Department of Safety and Security in the UN, to look at the police response to that and how that police response has changed. Noreen, good morning.
Morning, Anton.
So we saw the situations like happened along in Coolock on the Malahide Road, where there was a significant unrest, and largely the Gardaí played a hands-off, quasi-spectator role. If anything got out of hand, they moved in, but otherwise there was a desire not to be overly interventive. That seems to have changed fairly significantly, has it?
Well, I think it has changed, and I think it's changed because of the changing circumstances and the intensity of some of the protest and the protest activity. But I think it's important also to put it in context. So from an Garda Síochána's perspective, you know, Ireland has a very tolerant approach to lawful protest. And I say that by actually the Gardaí do a lot of work engaging with people who have genuine grievances, genuine concerns, and local residents or communities that want to raise issues. And I think it compares actually very favourably right across Europe and the rest of the world, because there is a very tolerant, engaging engagement with those that wish to protest. Rules of engagement are laid down. Protest is facilitated. That's lawful protest, where people can actually air their grievances. And you would see it sometimes even outside the Dáil itself and in different areas where, you know, in some countries, people aren't allowed to have that type of visible protest. And I think that's a very important part of our democracy, to facilitate lawful demonstration and protest.
Now, has that changed thanks to the presence of social media? Are those protests now easier to get hijacked, and are they getting hijacked more?
I think social media has a huge place, but I do think we also have to recognise that in relation to a number of issues, not just migration, but a number of issues, local residents and local communities have genuine fears, genuine concerns, and they need to be given an opportunity to air those grievances, those concerns. And also they need to be listened to. They need to be heard by government and other agencies that are engaged with local communities. But also there needs to be an opportunity to actually seek out and look out for what is the truth in some of the situations. And social media has a huge role to play. So what you see being amplified at the moment on social media is a lot of misinformation and disinformation. If I use City West as a particular example, what you saw there was a number of agitators from Canada, from the UK, and even further afield, a number of commentaries on social media. So certainly social media has changed the dynamic, and a lot of people get caught up with the misinformation, the disinformation, and the hype on social media, where stories are distorted and stories and untruths are told, and people get mobilised into a sense of, more of a sense of grievance.
And to what extent did the Gardaí have the capacity to intervene and to interdict before that before it kicks off? If you go back to the days of football hooliganism, you used to get reports from the UK police to say the following people are travelling, therefore be aware of them. Is there the capacity to do that with social media, with those agitators? Is there a way to catch them before it kicks off?
Yes. So the Garda approach to all of these, so if there's planned protests, there will be a lot of intelligence gathering, information gathering, including open source intelligence and also different sources of intelligence. A lot of football hooliganism is a very good example. A lot of engagement with other police forces, other security services, and getting a picture of who's coming. Spontaneous protests are somewhat different because it's happening in real time. The mobilisation is happening on social media. But social media platforms and the regulator, Commissioner Naman, also have a role to play. So if you look at the disinformation, the misinformation, misinformation that's put out there, if you look at the hate that's been incited, the violence that's been incited, there are obligations on the social media platforms and on the regulator, social media regulator, to do that. So again, back to City West, what you would have seen there was a lot of streaming, live streaming done from the protest itself. And that was been monetized with some of the algorithms and social media on different platforms, etc. So there, that is in breach of a number of codes right across the social media platforms themselves, but also from our own regulator and indeed the European regulator. And, you know, our own Commissioner Michael McGrath has the European Shield for Democracy. So this is something that has been seen right across Europe, right across the world, the monetizing of live streams of protests and misinformation in order to, for platforms and others and other organisations and individuals to make money.
From the Garda's perspective and the Gardaí's perspective then, what, how do they balance the that need to allow peaceful protest with the need to control it so that it doesn't get out of hand? If we look back to almost 2 years ago this month to what happened in Dublin, there were Gardaí literally running for their lives because of the nature of how egregious that the violence became. Do guards feel constrained in their response to those kind that kind of violence?
So from a Garda point of view and from a policing point of view, it's about a balancing of rights and a balancing of interests. And if I take, again, City West as a very good example, actually, there's a lot of engagement goes on with the local community, with local residents. And in order to facilitate the protest in the first stage, that goes on. In City West, you have a population of probably upwards of 2,000 people, including up to about 300 children in the IPAS centre and in the centre there that's on the City West campus. So you can imagine that there has to be a lot of engagement with those people. And Garda Síochána do a lot of work in terms of engaging with the layers of community that live in these areas. And then what you also have is you have engagement, as I say, with other police forces, with other services to see what can be kind of brought in real time.
So when it all gets aggressive, when it all becomes violent, there is a sort of a sense that says that the individual guards on the front line are afraid that they will find themselves hauled in front of GSOC. They're afraid that they will get themselves prosecuted. And therefore, things that you see in other European countries, and particularly in the States, where you would get a much more aggressive response when bricks are getting flung at you. Do members in Ireland feel that their hands are tied?
Well, the first thing is a graduated response. So yes, people are afraid. And I think also we have to remember that that thin blue line is made up of human beings. And when their families see this unfolding online, they're terrified for their members. And as in City West, you know, we had 6 members injured. That horrific footage of the sergeant that was caught on O'Connell Bridge and the attacks on him on O'Connell Bridge. Can you imagine how his family felt and his colleagues felt seeing him isolated there? So that's the first thing I would say. It is about having a graduated response. So the first line of defence, if you like, is to facilitate the protest where you will see the people in ordinary Garda uniform. Behind that, you will have the tiered response of the public order unit. And certainly since the riots in 2023, what you see is a lot of, I hate that term, lessons have been learned, but actually every single event has a debrief. And what I can certainly see is Garda Síochána have taken on board what their own members told them, the lessons that have been learned. What we saw at City West was very strong, visible leadership, and that's really important to keep up the morale of the people on the front line. But also the tactics have changed. The personal protection equipment, the body armour has changed, the incapacitant spray, in other words, the pepper spray, that has also changed. But the training, and you know, these people are volunteers, so they volunteer for public order duty. I think it's a really good, the strength of Garda Síochána is the camaraderie and the solidarity. You see people coming from all over. So for example, in City West, you would have a lot of people coming in volunteering from the adjoining regions. And then there's a command structure. So the command structure starts at the top level with the strategic, then the operational and the tactical. And, you know, when I was observing, not as a disinterested observer, observing what was happening and unfolding in City West, it was very clear to me, both in the build up to it, but also in the aftermath, was that strong, visible leadership. So I think reassuring members that that graduate, proportionate, necessary and justified response will be supported.
Why would somebody volunteer for the public order unit? Because when you see the abuse that the Gardaí suffer, in some instances, not in all protests, some are entirely peaceful, but some of the abuse and the way that they are treated, why would anybody put their hand up and say, I want to do that?
Well, the motivation actually for most members joining Garda Síochána is the protection of life and property and to make sure that people are safe and people are able to go about their business. And the members that volunteer for public order duty, they actually, that is their motivation. They want to keep people safe. They want to protect life and property. And, you know, again, using City West as an example, I can give an anecdote from there. So everybody would have seen the visuals of a Garda van being set on fire. But actually, that was to block a potential entrance into the City West campus that was identified by the guards on the ground. And they actually pulled themselves and their van across that entrance to block the protesters that were intent on going in. You know, there were calls online on social media to torch the place. Like, there were 300 people, 300 children and over 2,000 people inside in that building at the time. So those guards took very, in my view, very brave, very courageous decision to do that. And, you know, it just goes to show. And then that van actually continued to block the entrance for the rest of the protest. But that's what members actually volunteer to do. And all Garda members join to protect life and property. They swear up to actually protect the state, to protect individuals and to ensure that people are kept safe and can feel safe.
But reading between the lines, I get the sense that it is your view that they are having to do that too much because the source of the problem is not being addressed in terms of the formation of that violence.
Yes. So I think the intensity of the protests that we're seeing, and also it's very difficult. These are different types of protests than we would have seen years ago. So they're a loose alliance of people. They're agitators, single agitators. They have no coherent ideology, no coherent motivation. You know, people can be incentivized because of their fears, because a genuine held fears. But also then you have people who want to stoke trouble. They want to incite violence. They want to cause others to do it. So what happens is you have these lines of protesters, some of them very lawful, very legitimate protesters, but they get caught up in all of this hype. And I mentioned earlier about the role that social media plays in this. And, you know, the social media platforms certainly have a responsibility in terms of moderating and modifying the content that's on the platforms. But also, you know, people need to question themselves about what is actually the truth that's been put out there. This information has been put out there really quickly. There's not time to verify it or trust and verify. So people are actually believing what they're seeing. And that stokes further resentment, further fear and confusion. And part of the role of
very difficult, though, to get the people to second guess everything they see, to be constantly vigilant, to believe nothing. Very few people would do.
Yes, but also I think, you know, there is something, there's an obligation on us as the state and on all of us as individuals to actually engage with people, to be honest and transparent and truthful in what's happening in some of these areas. You know, another thing that I noticed with the difference in the approach to City West was the Gardaí were very out very, very quickly with their communication strategy. So actually telling people what was happening, making it very clear that there would be a robust response. You know, if I use another example of the port tunnel that a lot of people would say is seen have been visually blocked by the support Palestine protesters. You know, you would have seen that happening.
Because there was deployment of pepper spray on the East Wall Road.
That was on the second occasion. So there was engagement. There was, if you like, facilitated protest, which was disruptive. But actually, across EU law, actually disruption and civil disobedience is allowed. And that's part of the proportionate response. But when it tips over into something that's other than that, so when there's missiles started to be fired at the Gardaí, if there's damage to property or threats to individuals, then it changes into a much more robust response. And that's when you would see the likes of the deployment of pepper spray and the public order unit being deployed.
Are the Gardaí sufficiently equipped with non-lethal or less than lethal weapons?
Yes, they are. And, you know, if you look at the investment, even since the Dublin riots in 2023, the investments that have been made in the body armour and the personal protection equipment, in the shields and in the incapacitant sprays, so the pepper sprays and non-less than lethal. Then you also have that tiered response where the Strategic and Tactical Operation Command, so that's the ERU, so the Emergency Response Unit and the Armed Support Units that are around the country, they would also be equipped with tasers, which are non-lethal options. So, you know, the Gardaí have a very distinct reputation right across Europe and the rest of the world as to their approach being an unarmed policing service, which I think has stood because we do police by consent. You know, the Irish public wanting police by consent. But it is that balancing of rights and interests. And how do you make that happen when you have a cohort of people who are intent on causing complete violence and harm?
Now, have we always had that cohort? Because if you read back to the turn of the previous century, there were gangs that used to meet for just to have the enjoyment of a riot and pitch battles in Dublin. We had football hooliganism through the 80s and 90s, albeit not in any way as bad as we had as there was in the UK. Is there not always a cohort of young disenfranchised men who want to have a riot for fun?
Yes, but a riot for fun, you know, a riot for fun is actually breaching the law. So actually a riot for fun where you go around and wantonly break windows or damage people's properties. So one of the things...
Oh, I'm not suggesting it's in any way acceptable or explicable, but is it any different now than it used to be?
I think it is, because what you're now doing is you're mobilising people, some people who are disaffected people, young people and not so young people, people, as I say, who have genuine grievances, genuine fears and genuine concerns about what's happening in their communities. And now what you have is the amplification of social media in terms of mobilising these people. You know, as I say, the social media platforms take their own policies seriously in some cases, but actually they do need to address the issues where other people are actually monetizing some of the algorithms to actually make money for their causes and their organizations.
I spoke to you when the task force report that you had chaired into potential political violence emerged, and you then described the fears that you held for the likelihood of there being an attack on a politician. We saw recently Mary Lou McDonald's canvassing team be on the receiving end of some fairly egregious behaviour. Do you still hold that concern that we are likely to see somebody get badly hurt?
Yes, I still hold that concern in relation to not just our elected representatives, but I think, you know, some of this activity has real life consequences for other people. So if you look at, for example, the recent assaults on some members of the Indian community, you know, people actually, if you stoke hatred and resentment, it actually does have real life consequences for people. And that can be elected representatives, but that can also be individuals who are going about their business. And I think that is a concern that I really hold. And, you know, as I look forward and say, what can we do about this? This is where actually we need to show solidarity across our communities, across our government, and with working really with communities to actually address the issues.
Norna Sullivan, thank you very much. That is Norna Sullivan, former Garda Commissioner and former Assistant Secretary General for the Department of Security and Safety at the UN.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.